Tom Woods Show, episode 2218.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Come on now, folks. If you ain't going to start that side hustle now, then when? Check out my free ebook, Five Paths to an Online Income, where I take you step by step through five things that I do that keep food on the Woods household table and how you can do them too. Check it out at pathstoincome.com.
Hey, everybody. Tom Woods here. I want to talk about an item I just saw in the news and the significance of it. Remember a guy named Jack Phillips? About a decade or so ago, he got in trouble in Colorado because he refused to bake a wedding cake for a same-sex ceremony. And then eventually his case made it to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court, on very strange and narrow grounds, ended up ruling in his favor. But as I mentioned at the time, it didn't really seem like any huge victory to me for reasons I'll get into in this episode. Well, he's back in the news because now they're, you know, of course, ever since then, there are certain sorts of people, the sort of people who refuse to live and let live, put it that way, who just can't let this man continue his work in peace. So the Colorado Court of Appeals just heard oral arguments in Scardina versus Masterpiece Cake Shop. Masterpiece Cake Shop is the bakery that Phillips has had since 1993. And this case involves a cake, blue frosting with pink interior, to celebrate the beginning of autumn Scardina's identifying as a woman. So Scardina's an attorney, and it so happened that he asked Phillips to make him this gender transition cake on the very day that the Supreme Court said that it would be taking on the earlier case involving the same-sex ceremony cake. So it's pretty clear that, as an article in the American Conservative puts it, that the actions of Scardina were vindictive and targeted, that he didn't really want a cake. He just wanted to put Jack Phillips in a bind. And of course, helps that he's practically admitted that. And as this article in the American Conservative puts it, at this rate, Jack Phillips will be in court until the day he dies. This article I'm referring to is by Declan Leary. And he says, "It is self-evidently true that a society in which a man can be forced halfway out of his business and dragged time and time again through years of vindictive legal action for refusing to act against his faith is not a society in which a man is free to practice his religion. That Phillips scored a narrow SCOTUS win is secondary, if not entirely irrelevant. Bare bones legal backstops are not enough. They are not anywhere near enough. And yet, they are all Jack Phillips will ask for. All through this decade-long odyssey, the man has bent over backwards to highlight just how limited his request is. He will not lend his skill as a craftsman immediately to celebrations he believes to be immoral. There is no question that those celebrations should go on. He just asks not to be involved." On Wednesday, Phillips co-wrote an op-ed in USA Today with Lori Smith, a graphic artist and website designer, in a similar predicament. They insisted, quote, "Our cases aren't about what any of us believe regarding marriage. They're about freedom for all of us from government oppression and respecting the right of each of us to our own opinion, even if we don't always agree." And then back to Leary. "Under a boot heel, Jack Phillips begs for the privilege of coexistence. Maybe this is a tactical move advised by his lawyers for public relations purposes. Maybe Jack Phillips is just a man of saintly patience. But he will not get any victory or even peace this way. American Christians keep taking beatings, and all they can think to ask for is a break. They ought to ask for a club. They won't leave Jack Phillips alone. They can't leave Jack Phillips alone. He embodies a worldview that is diametrically opposed to their own, and that they recognize must be stamped out if they hope to secure enduring rule." So I want to go back now and look at the case that I guess was decided in 2018, Masterpiece Cake Shop versus Colorado Civil Rights Commission, because I think this is an opportune moment for us to recall precisely the state of, let's say, constitutional interpretation on issues like this. Now, you would think that what we're dealing with is a matter of private property versus somebody's demand for public accommodation. And the argument would be something like this, that Jack Phillips owns this bakery. And as the owner, he gets to decide what happens inside that bakery. He gets to decide what cakes are baked, and he gets to make all the various decisions about what products he offers and what the hours are and all these things, because it's his store and it's his private property. Against this, we balance the claim of some people that by virtue of having opened a store, people have a right to expect public accommodation that's non-discriminatory, that if you've opened your doors to the general public, then the general public ought to be able to go through those doors and equally get the goods and services that they request. And then you pit these two things against each other and you see which one wins out. But that's not what's going on here, because Congress decided decades ago that it doesn't matter that the store is your private property. That makes no difference, that when the state has an interest in particular outcomes, that absolutely overrides your having private property in your business. And what that means is that when you have a case like Jack Phillips and the wedding cake, it becomes very complicated, because you can't simply say, well, it's Jack Phillips's bakery, so he gets to decide which cakes are baked, end of story. You want somebody else to bake your cake? Go find somebody else to bake your cake. That'd be the end of it. This decision goes on interminably with dissenting voices, with concurring voices, but that have different ways of reasoning to the conclusion, with arguing about the cultural meaning of a wedding cake and the significance of what if the cake had been undecorated versus decorated. The thing goes all around the relevant point over and over and over and over, spends scores and scores and scores of pages evading the fundamental issue over and over and over because of the bind that anti-discrimination law has put the court into. So they want to make a reasonable decision, but the way the law is stated, it's almost impossible for them to do so. So they have to instead spend their time investigating different types of cakes and what they mean, and is a decoration on a cake expression, and is expression speech, and now does this touch on the First Amendment? And of course, the First Amendment, as originally understood, doesn't even have anything to do with Colorado. The First Amendment applies only to the federal government. The states individually have their own protections for the freedom of speech. In the 1833 case Barron versus Baltimore, a unanimous court explained that the Bill of Rights applies only to the federal government, not to the states, and that everybody knew that. And given that John Marshall was not known for siding with the states, for him to have a decision, unanimous decision like that, is very, very significant. So they're using the so-called incorporation doctrine of the 14th Amendment. They don't use that term, but that's what they're using, whereby they say that the 14th Amendment more or less applied the Bill of Rights to the states. But they're using the 14th Amendment alleged application of the First Amendment to the states in order to justify basically a non-progressive outcome. And usually the progressives have just assumed that if we have the 14th Amendment at our disposal, we can use it as a crowbar to pry our way into all kinds of local institutions to get our way and have things turn out the way we want. But it doesn't always turn out that way, as the Masterpiece Cake Shop case reveals. That the claim is that actually the Colorado Civil Rights Commission did not respect the freedom of religion of Jack Phillips. And so therefore they violated the First Amendment, and now we're going to overturn their decision. So it goes to show that the federal government being able to intervene in state and local matters doesn't necessarily always have the progressive outcome that people who pushed that for a long time, I think, assumed that it would. So the case goes back to, as I say, 10 years ago, 2012, when a same-sex couple visited a bakery in Colorado, namely Jack Phillips's bakery. They wanted a cake for their wedding reception. At that time, gay marriage was not recognized in Colorado, so they were going to have a ceremony in Massachusetts, then come back to Colorado for a reception with friends and family. And so Jack Phillips sat down with them and explained he could not create this cake for them because he has a religious opposition to same-sex marriage. So they filed a charge with the Colorado Civil Rights Commission to compel him. Imagine doing that. I mean, imagine actually filing a charge against somebody to compel him to bake you a cake. I mean, imagine the kind of person you'd have to be to do that. But that's what they did. that this violated the Colorado Anti-Discrimination Act, and so he is to be compelled to bake this cake against his will. All right. Well, so the commission, the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, in turn determined that the cake shop did violate the Anti-Discrimination Act and ruled in favor of the couple. Then the Colorado state courts affirmed this ruling and the enforcement order. So the Supreme Court then was deciding whether the commission's order requiring Jack Phillips to bake that cake violated the Constitution. And so the opinion of the court is delivered by Justice Anthony Kennedy. And the court is going to be arguing that the state has an interest in balancing two competing claims here. On the one hand, the state wants to defend the free exercise of religion on the part of any person, including Jack Phillips the baker. At the same time, the state has an interest in protecting certain protected groups from discrimination. And so we have to bring these two concerns into balance. So notice, private property never even enters the picture. So what the court is going to decide is that the Colorado Civil Rights Commission did not observe the necessary balance here because the commission exhibited an anti-religious bias in the way they heard and responded to the Phillips case. So the Supreme Court is going to say in the decision for the court by Anthony Kennedy that Phillips is entitled to a respectful treatment of his arguments, and he did not get that. So we're going to look at specific examples of what the court has in mind when it says he wasn't treated fairly by the commission. So the point is, they're saying the Colorado Civil Rights Commission did not give due consideration to Phillips's position, and that pretty much ties our hands here at the Supreme Court because they should have done that. So the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, therefore, was just so clearly biased in one direction that it didn't give due consideration to one of the two sides. So we have to overrule what happened. Now, I mentioned before that my friend Kevin Gutzman, who was on a radio show to talk about this decision, made an interesting point. He compared it to the Backe case from, I think, 1978 that involved the University of California system and affirmative action. Backe, B-A-K-K-E, was a prospective medical student, and he was rejected for admission to the university, even though he had grades that were much stronger than the grades of minority students who were accepted in his place. And the Supreme Court conceded this in a footnote, and Gutzman put it this way: the qualifications of the minority students involved were pitifully poor. So what the court wound up saying in the Backe case in the late 70s was, in a very garbled decision, if there had been an outright quota system at work in the University of California system, well, that we could not accept. You can't have an outright quota system. However, you can admit somebody on the basis of race as long as race is just one of the factors under consideration. But what kind of a decision is that? Obviously, if it winds up being the deciding factor, then it may as well have been the only factor. So what the Backe case was in effect saying was, okay, if you want to have this kind of policy outcome, just don't be so obvious and open about it next time. You know, try to cloak it in 12 other considerations. Don't openly say it's a quota system. That's embarrassing to us. If you just couch it the right way, you'll get what you want. And that's what Kevin is saying is going on in the Jack Phillips case. They're basically saying, if you want the outcome to go your way next time, just don't act like complete imbeciles like the people on the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. You know, then you're going to be fine. Just avoid being openly moronic and belligerent towards somebody who's religious, and chances are things are going to go your way. That's certainly the way I read this. So let's go back to Anthony Kennedy's decision for the court. He says that Phillips the baker argued that he had to use his artistic skills to make an expressive statement. And that's the thing here. That's what Phillips is doing, expressive, because then it comes to be considered to be like speech. Clarence Thomas, in his concurring opinion, says that there are many cases where the court has spoken of behaviors or activities as being effectively speech, like burning a flag or waving a flag or nude dancing or whatever. And they've said that that's more or less like speech. So if that's speech, then certainly giving a meaning to a cake would be expressive speech. That's the argument that Phillips is making, and that's the argument Thomas himself makes. So anyway, back to Anthony Kennedy. He says that Phillips argues he had to use his artistic skills to make an expressive statement, a wedding endorsement in his own voice and of his own creation. So as Phillips would see the case, this contention has a significant First Amendment speech component and implicates his deep and sincere religious beliefs. So in this context, the baker found it difficult to find a line where the customer's rights to goods and services became a demand for him to exercise the right of his own personal expression for their message, a message he could not express in a way consistent with his religious beliefs. Then the court further observed that at that time, state law did afford storekeepers some latitude to decline to create specific messages that storekeepers considered offensive. So on several other occasions, the Civil Rights Division in Colorado had sided with bakers who had declined to create cakes. Those were cakes that had demeaned homosexual people or marriages, and they had said, we're not doing that, and the Civil Rights Commission had upheld that decision by those bakers. So what exactly was it that the Colorado Civil Rights Commission did that gives the Supreme Court the impression that it was not neutrally evaluating the merits of Phillips's case? Well, here I'm reading from the court's decision. At several points during its meeting, commissioners endorsed the view that religious beliefs cannot legitimately be carried into the public sphere or commercial domain, implying that religious beliefs and persons are less than fully welcome in Colorado's business community. One commissioner suggested that Phillips can believe, quote, what he wants to believe, unquote, but cannot act on his religious beliefs, quote, if he decides to do business in the state, unquote. And then a few moments later, the commission restated this same position, saying, quote, if a businessman wants to do business in the state and he's got an issue with the laws impacting his personal belief system, he needs to look at being able to compromise, unquote. The court says that these statements standing alone don't prove discriminatory intent on the part of the Civil Rights Commission, but taken in tandem with what comes later, it strongly suggests that that is indeed what's happening. So the commissioner said, I would also like to reiterate what we said in the hearing or the last meeting. Freedom of religion and religion has been used to justify all kinds of discrimination throughout history, whether it be slavery, whether it be the Holocaust, we can list hundreds of situations where freedom of religion has been used to justify discrimination. And to me, it is one of the most despicable pieces of rhetoric that people can use to use their religion to hurt others. Now, that little outburst right there is going to be used very liberally by the court, because the court now says that to describe a man's faith as one of the most despicable pieces of rhetoric that people can use is to disparage his religion in at least two distinct ways, by describing it as despicable, and also by characterizing it as merely rhetorical, something insubstantial and even insincere. The commissioner even went so far, and again, I'm still quoting from the court, as to compare Phillips's invocation of his sincerely held religious beliefs to defenses of slavery and the Holocaust. This sentiment is inappropriate for a commission charged with the solemn responsibility of fair and neutral enforcement of Colorado's anti-discrimination law, a law that protects discrimination on the basis of religion as well as sexual orientation. All right, let me interrupt this meditation on wedding cakes with a quick word of thanks to our sponsor, Blinkist. It's probably fair to say by now my listeners are familiar with Blinkist. It's an amazing app that gives you the opportunity to come into contact with all kinds of interesting new ideas in dozens of different subject areas by means of giving you the central critical points of major important works of nonfiction in just 15 minutes. So just the typical American commute can get you 3 to 4 books under your belt. And we're talking everything from biographies to entrepreneurship, history, money and investment, parenting, philosophy, psychology, religion, science, you name it. You'll also find libertarian classics like Murray Rothbard's For a New Liberty and Milton Friedman's Capitalism and Freedom, as well as conservative classics like The Conservative Mind by Russell Kirk, or The Conscience of a Conservative by Barry Goldwater, even Righteous Indignation by Andrew Breitbart. But now with their brand new feature, Blinkist Connect, you can kick things up a notch. You can share your account with another person of your choice, so that's like 2 premium accounts for the price of 1, no extra cost, and easily share Blinkist content among yourselves. And you can add additional comments and thoughts to the recommendations to learn and to discuss the content being shared. Right now, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/woods to start your 7-day free trial and get 25% off a Blinkist premium membership. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/woods to get 25% off and a 7-day free trial. Blinkist.com/woods. And now for a limited time, you can even use Blinkist Connect to share your premium account. You get 2 premium subscriptions for the price of 1. Well, then the court says that another way we can detect hostility on a religious basis against Phillips's case is the difference between how Phillips's case was treated and the cases of other bakers who objected to a requested cake on the basis of conscience and prevailed before the commission. Now, what's interesting is, in the decision of the court drafted by Kennedy, you actually don't find out anything about these other cakes. You have to look at the Neil Gorsuch decision, concurring. When Gorsuch concurs, he writes about the nature of those cakes. Just so you know, those cakes apparently had pages of the Bible in them and so on. So it was depicting that homosexual marriage had to be considered a sin. Homosexuality was a sin. It was that sort of thing. And these bakers refused to bake these kinds of cakes. So it's very vague here exactly what kind of cake these other bakers were able to refuse. So the Civil Rights Division of Colorado said that in each case, the requested cake included wording and images the baker deemed derogatory or hateful or discriminatory. So the baker found fault with what was proposed to be depicted on these cakes and therefore refused to provide the cakes, and the commission upheld their decision to refuse to furnish those cakes. Now the commission, though, at the same time, is going to rule against Phillips on the grounds that any message that might appear on a wedding cake would be attributed to the customer, not the baker. So he doesn't have to bear that burden. You know, he can just say, look, this is what people asked of me. It's not my sentiment on the cake. It's the customer's sentiment. But if that's the ruling principle, then why wouldn't that principle have applied to these other cakes? Why are these other cakes denigrating homosexuality and homosexuals? Why couldn't people have baked those and said, well, that's not my sentiment. That's just what the customer asked for. It's obviously a double standard. And those bakers, just like Phillips, told the customers, we'll sell you anything else you want. You know, we'll sell you a birthday cake, we'll sell you cookies, we'll sell whatever you want. But we just can't do that one thing. We're not saying that because you are this type of person with this type of belief, or you're this type of person, you know, who wants to have this type of wedding, that I will not serve you at all. I can't give you this particular thing, but you can have anything else you want. And in fact, the Colorado Civil Rights Commission said, you see, there's no discriminatory intent on the part of bakers who didn't want to bake cakes with these denigrating statements on them. They'll sell any other product to the customer. So you see, there's no intent to discriminate. So again, well, then why wouldn't you use the same argument for Phillips? He too was willing to sell any other product to the customer. Why doesn't that show non-discriminatory intent in Phillips's case? So the Supreme Court puts all this together and says, you look at all this taken together, it's obvious that there's a double standard going on in the case of Phillips. Now, trust me, if you read this decision, you are going to be blown away at all the nitpicking level of detail they go into about wedding cakes and their cultural significance and what they mean. And this is what you have to do when the natural decision is, well, sorry you didn't get your cake, but you can go to another baker. But since you're not allowed to say that anymore, you have to come up with all these convoluted arguments drawing from the history of wedding cakes and stuff to try to reach your conclusion. I'm not even scratching the surface here. I'm really not. I did a whole episode on this years ago. In that one, I gave you a lot of detail about wedding cakes, more than you ever wanted. And really what it boils down to is, am I allowed to say that this cake celebrating this wedding is offensive to me? Or am I allowed only to be offended by those things that the Colorado Court of Appeals thinks I should be offended by? And is it up to the state to determine for everybody what's offensive and what's not, and what I'm allowed to not decorate or sell or bake for and all this stuff? It's crazy. Again, how about we just have the opinion that if somebody doesn't want to bake me a cake, I go to another baker, instead of saying I'm going to devote myself to destroying this person? I suppose some people could say to me, it's easy for me to say that, because chances are if I went in and ordered a cake from somebody, there'd be no problem. They'd just give it to me. So I suppose I don't know what it's like to have somebody turn down your cake order. But yet at the same time, I don't feel like this is the world's worst example of oppression either. And I can't imagine that my response would be, I'm going to spend the rest of my life basically waging a war on this person, which is certainly going to destroy him, or at least my goal is to destroy him. That's not the society I want to live in. I don't want that to be an option. Somebody doesn't want to do business with me, therefore, because I'm God's gift to mankind, you don't deserve to exist. Or you have a different opinion from me, your moral views are different from mine, therefore you don't deserve to exist. I don't want to live in that society. I'd much rather say, well, you don't want to do business? Well, all right, I'll find somebody who does. Now, again, what I said earlier, let's bear in mind, is that the court seems to be saying is that if you want to screw over a Christian baker, just don't be openly and in a low IQ way anti-religion when you do it. because then you'll probably get what you want. So that's why I'm not convinced that this case was a huge victory. And again, this idea, we've got to balance your right to your religion with our interest in keeping people from being discriminated against. I don't know how you do that. That sounds really complicated. So why not have this simple principle we can all agree on? We just let people who want to interact with each other interact with each other. And if people don't want to interact with you, why is that actually a problem? If they don't want to interact with you, why would you want to interact with them? Why would you want to give your money to somebody who hates you so much? He'd rather be poor than interact with you? Why are you so eager to have a chance to interact with that person? Wouldn't it be better for that person to be totally open about where he stands so you can tell the world about it? Not to mention that it gets rid of all these problems of interminable cases about cakes and the difference between a decorated and an undecorated cake. And we can forget about all that. Well, let's hope for the best for old Jack Phillips, who represents something in the same way that Trump represented something that's more important than Trump himself. Pope Francis represents something that's more important than Pope Francis himself. Jack Phillips represents something more important than Jack Phillips himself. This is true in a lot of moments in U.S. history and in current events all the time. Sometimes there's an individual who just represents something, who embodies something. And sometimes that individual doesn't really live up to your expectations or whatever, but you know why people don't like that person. Or conversely, you know why people love that person, because of what the person represents. Now, some people will say Jack Phillips represents hatred and irrationality. Other people will say Jack Phillips represents an America that has had radical changes thrown at it year after year after year, has tried to come to terms with it out of an expression of goodwill, best that it can, has been shown no grace in the course of this at all, and is trying to say that if the very same people who asked simply for tolerance are now going to grab the guns to compel me to do things against my will, well, we're not going to pretend anymore that we're dealing with unfortunate people who are put upon by wicked oppressors. We now recognize that you are part of the regime now, that you're making demands on our consciences and on our society that are not reasonable and do not appear to be motivated by justice or love or tolerance, but by an obsession with stamping out dissident voices. That's what Jack Phillips represents. He hasn't done a thing wrong. He's just operating his private business. And if you don't like the way he operates that bakery, there are lots of other bakeries. The reason you would hound him is to make a statement. I might add that Alex Jones represents something. Again, beyond Alex Jones himself, he represents something. And when there's a $1 billion decision sent down against Alex Jones, that's not just a minor thing in the headlines. That's meant to send a message. You go up against the regime, you will be destroyed. So for those of us who root for the underdog, who root for the guy who could be destroyed by the regime, we should be cheering on poor Jack Phillips, who just wants to run his bakery in peace. All right, folks, if you like what I'm doing here on The Tom Woods Show, I would be delighted to have you in my private group, The Tom Woods Show Elite, the best group in the history of groups, which is but one of the many goodies I give you as a thank you for supporting The Tom Woods Show. When you've been around as long as I have, you accumulate a huge set of goodies to draw from to give to people when they help you out. So check out supportinglisteners.com. Be part of the greatest group in the history of groups, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of The Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.